I didn't think he was ready. They might say he was ready, but for myself and talking with him, it's just not is the ankle ready, it's is his head ready. And I didn't think he was ready to play tonight, so I made that decision.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by MyBookie. Sign up now and get your deposit matched with up to 50% bonus by using the promo code LOCKEDONNBA at MyBookie.ag. My name is Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst over at BasketballMonster.com. You can find me on Twitter at RedRock_BBall. So make sure you're checking me out there over at Basketball Monster, and you can find out everything to do with the podcast at LockedOnFantasyBasketball.com as well. We've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to recap all 9 games from Wednesday, including, again, just more bizarre shit happening across the NBA, as it does all the time, and then preview Thursday's 5-game slate. So
let's get to it.
All right, that's a really good idea. Let's do that indeed. We will start with the monstrous line of the night. There were a few candidates, but in the end, it goes to Christopher Paul, who had 31 points with 7 rebounds, 11 assists, 5 threes and 2 steals. He was 10 of 18 from the field. He was 6 of 6 from the free throw line. He is currently the 8th ranked player in fantasy. Yes, there was a level of a dip from last season. Was there? Maybe not. He was the 10th ranked guy last year. He is 8th at the moment. He is averaging 16, 5, and 9.6, which is actually more assists than what he averaged in his final season with the Clippers. Over 2 steals per game. The efficiency is fine. He's fine. Everything's going well. But everyone wringing their hands. I'm not taking Chris Paul in the first round. I'm not taking him in the second round. I'm not taking James Harden in the top 3. Harden and Paul are doing basically exactly the same thing as what they were doing last season. And in terms of their fantasy value, it's basically identical. Really putting up some big numbers. Paul obviously had that injury concern to start the season and came back a little bit slow after that, but he has now scored at least 20 points in 4 of the past 5 games. He has dished double-figure assists in 2 of those 5 games as well. Multiple steals in the last 5 games. So he still numbers 2-3-2-3-2. This is just vintage Chris Paul stuff. He's hit 50% of his shots in the past 4 games. It's ludicrous. And you were able to get him, and it probably looked like a shit decision after he went down after game 1 and some of the preseason struggles, but you were able to get him in the mid-second round, probably, in a lot of cases. And it looks like at the moment that he is putting up some pretty impressive, well, not it looks like, he is putting up some pretty impressive numbers. In fact, over the last 2 weeks, he's the 4th ranked player in fantasy, averaging 23, 6.5, and 8.5 with 3 triples and 2.5 steals on 52, 91, and 44. And I talk a lot about unsustainable shooting. It's not really that unsustainable for Chris Paul. He has always been a high efficiency player. Yeah, the 44% from 3 is high, but he shot 41 last season. So it's not crazy. 52% from the field compared to 48 last year. I would have expected somewhat of a bump this season playing alongside James Harden in this offense. Probably not to that level, but it's not completely crazy that he could, you know, hover around the 48 to 49%. He has been an absolute monster, and therefore he is your monstrous line of the night for Wednesday's action in the NBA. Now I've got to tell you about the great people over at MyBookie who have come on once again to support the podcast. If you are looking and you need holiday cash, I know the best place for you to go and get it, because I know all you guys know your sport, you know your NBA, you know your other sports as well. MyBookie is the place to score serious cash on your sports predictions. Believe it or not, the holidays are just around the corner. And while that means plenty of parties, gifts, and spending, it means there's lots of sport going on. Basketball, football, hockey, you can score big on those every day. Make sure you play like a pro on game day. Play the money line, the sides, totals. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs and offers super fast payouts when you win. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And if you want to go and bet somewhere reliable and get fast payouts and have all the options available to you, you got to go to mybookie.ag. That's the site that I would recommend for you guys who are living over in the States to go and test out your sports knowledge. Go and check them out for yourself. They have odds on every matchup and a mobile site that makes wagering on your smartphone a breeze. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with an up to a 50% bonus. You just have to use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, which tells them at MyBookie that you came from listening to this podcast. That activates your offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. The waiver wire line of the night goes to the Duke, Wayne Ellington. He is back, 24 points, 7 triples, 4 rebounds, 2 steals and a block, and he was blistering. I think he hit his first 7 shots, and 6 of those were threes. 8 of 11 from the field, 1 of 1 from the line. Amazingly, the Duke is the 81st ranked player over the last 2 weeks in just 25 minutes a game, mainly because he's shooting at 50%. He is shooting at 48% from 3, and he's hitting 3.5 threes per game and 12 points per game. Over the course of the season, he's nowhere near that level. He's still shooting at an insanely efficient 43%. And if you're in one of the Red Rock listener leagues, his ability to influence that three-point percentage category, it can't be underestimated. And he is a guy that you need to really have a look at in those leagues, even though his other numbers might not look spectacular. For me, he is probably the elite three-point streaming option that's available in the league. You've got your Troy Daniels, you've got your Tone Tollivers. But the Duke is getting 20-plus minutes a night. He's lofting up shots at an insane rate. He is basically every single one of his shots comes from three-point range. If we have a look for the season, he is averaging 6.8 field goal attempts per game, and 6 of those are from three. So we're talking just an astonishing amount of shots coming from downtown. He's hitting them at a great clip. He's providing great value in that three-point category. And this is one of the reasons when I talk about, you know, looking at guys' values in drafts, you know, I discount turnovers, but also discount three-pointers just a little bit as well, because you can find blokes like the Duke around who can give you 2.5 to 3 triples per game pretty easily. Kyle Korver, Troy Daniels, Tone Tolliver, all these sort of guys. Etwan Moore's jumping into that mix now. Darius Miller down in New Orleans. All these guys that can come in and play 20 minutes a night and hit 2 to 2.5 threes. And the Duke is the king of those because he does it without really hurting your efficiency on a significant role at the moment. And if you added him in a 12-team league, I wouldn't say you're stupid. It's probably a matchup dependent thing, a lineup dependent thing. But at the 112th ranked player over the last month, who am I to argue with that sort of production with that high efficiency and that high output of threes, which is really important. Far from a must-own guy, of course, but he is putting up numbers and putting them up in a pretty significant way. The young gun of the night, pretty happy to announce that it is the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray. 28 points for Jamal, 10 rebounds, 4 triples, 4 assists, and 3 steals. He is 9 of 17 from the field and 6 of 6 from the line. Over the last week, he is a top 50 player. He has got top 50 upside for the rest of the season. Please make sure he's not on your waiver wire. He needs to be owned in every single league. The problem with him is going to be Michael Malone Dickery, and that's the problem with a lot of these Denver guys. But there is really no excuse for him to be playing fewer minutes than Emmanuel Mudiay at any point. Murray just is the better player, regardless of what you think of him as a point guard, whatever. He's a better player than Emmanuel Mudiay. He's not getting many assists, only 2.5 per game. But over the last 2 weeks, he's hitting 2.5 threes per game and averaging 17.5 points per game. And it's coming on only 46% shooting. So it's not like a situation of a Trevor Booker who's at, you know, 65% from the field. 46% is doable. Now, he's coming shooting 50% from three, which is clearly high. But he was a 40% three-point shooter in Kentucky. And prior to this little stretch here, he had struggled a bit from the NBA three-point line. Maybe he's got it figured out and he can be like a 37, 38% guy from here on out for the rest of the season. That's not an insane stretch, and he should be able to average 2 threes per game and at least 15 to 16 points per game. And maybe if he gets those assists up to 5 a game, we're talking about a player who then becomes a pretty solid top 40 guy. I'm not saying that he's going to be a top 40 guy, because there's a lot of ifs in that sentence. Boost your efficiency from 3, boost your field goal percentage, boost your assist rate. But if all those things come to fruition and Malone does play him the prescribed amount of minutes... Oh man, I'm trying not to make myself laugh, because I'll talk about it later. That's just me, my own humor. Don't even worry about it. I'll explain it later. He just needs to play the minutes. It's as simple as that. He needs to play these minutes, and I think that Malone will have the correct remedy for that and will get him out there and play him that playing time from now on. It's undeniable that Murray is the cure that ails that Denver backcourt, and I think we should see that continue to grow for him and his performance continue. There'll be some shit games mixed in there. There's no doubt about that, but he will be, I think, a much stronger player from here on out than what we've seen from him so far. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. The Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, he's had this award quite a few times, and this is maybe a little bit unfair because there weren't too many real turd performances from the highly owned players. And when I look at duds of the night, I'm looking at players who are owned in over 70% of leagues. So Dragic had 11-5-3, and that's not really terrible, but it's more the fact that he went 3 of 6 from the line, which is not great, 4 of 12 from the field, which is decidedly not great as well, and that did bump him down. So to become the dud of the night, nothing for me to really get too worried about. But if you look at his recent performances, he's the 130th ranked player over the last month and the 88th ranked guy for the season. I think he is significantly better than that. So if he gets dropped, I'd snap him up. You might be able to get a buy low on him. That's something you should definitely... You should definitely inquire about with the Dragic owner, because they might be looking at that and going, well, you know what? I'm just not sure about this guy. And I understand why they would think that, because even in a game today where Tyler Johnson was out, Justice Winslow got hurt, he still didn't play big minutes. The big minutes went to Dion Waiters. The big minutes went to Joshy Richardson, and he only played 32 minutes. So maybe, just maybe, at the age that he's at, we're looking at a level of decline from the Iron Shoulder. But still, try and attempt a significant buy low on him. That would be the way that I would be approaching Goran Dragic there. Let's take a look at these games now in a little bit more detail, as we do in this portion of the show every day. We've got 9 games from Wednesday to break down, so we're going to cover all of those off right now. That first game we'll look at is the LA Clippers against the Orlando Magic, two teams who were significantly struck down with injury. The Clippers suffered another injury blow with Austin Rivers copping an elbow to the jaw and him suffering a concussion. He will be out. Oh, he's out for the second half of this game. He will be out for Friday's action as well, then re-evaluated. I don't know how long he's going to miss because concussions are obviously a tricky thing. I would expect around a week would be my initial guess, but that is purely a guess. It could be 3 weeks. It could be one game. I don't know. Rivers has been strong this season, there's no doubt about that. But if we hear a diagnosis of, you know, 2 weeks' time, which is probably something they won't say because it's really hard to judge with concussions, you know, holding on to him, it might not be the best option, but it really depends on how your team is looking at the moment. Lou Williams had 31-3-8. He is obviously super strong value at the moment, while DeAndre had 16-20 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. He was always going to do well in a really good matchup here. The guy we want to talk about is Miloš Teodosic, 8-6-6, 2 threes, 1 steal, 1 block. I'll say it again, he's owned in 22% of leagues. That means in some of your leagues, you blokes are sitting on your hands. Go and add him. The Austin Rivers injury now, Pat Bev's out for the season, no Blake Griffin for a period of time, the Roosters out. You have to add Teodosic. He has to be owned. It's as simple as that. Has to be owned. Wes Johnson, 2 absolute turds in a row, 2-1-2 in 14 minutes, while Sammy Decker played some decent minutes. I've been a decent Decker fan, and it just feel like he's always started to let me down. But today, he hit 2 of his 4 threes, which is great, considering he was on 13% from deep before this game, and he played 26 minutes and had 12-4. Now, Johnson still is that triple one guy. He actually had a steal and a block in this game. Still providing those numbers. And Decker's not a player I'm really looking at in 12-teamers. Hopefully, the Rooster isn't too far away from coming back, and that's going to squash any Decker or Johnson value. But in a 18-team league, I'd be looking at Sammy and seeing what can happen. Juwan Evans got a boost with Rivers out. 25 minutes for him, 6-3-3 with 2 steals. I like what he can do for fantasy. I like him and Sindarius Thornwell, but trying to guess which one of them is going to benefit from Rivers being out. And there's also CJ Williams in the mix who started the second half. It's a tough one. So if you're in a 20-team league, Evans is the guy that I would probably look to ahead of Thornwell or Williams, but it really is just a guess to see how that all pans out. Unexpectedly, actually, totally expectedly, Montrezl Harrell, the table, wasn't able to do what he did in the last game. 7 points in 12 minutes. Just no real consistency from what he can do. Onto the Magic, Nick Vucevic, 14-12, 4 steals and 2 blocks. He has been a gigantic monster for this team. They were missing John Isaac, Aaron Gordon, Evan Fournier, and Vucevic stepped up in every game. The player that did step up, perhaps unexpectedly, was Mario Hezonja. 35 minutes for Hezonja, 17-9-4. 2 threes, 1 steal, and 3 blocks. Someone tweeted me today, said they were listening to an old podcast from about 2 years ago when I was talking about Hezonja's fantasy potential when he came across, because he was a guy that played in Europe as a big point guard, an athletic guy who can get, you know, one of those guys that, you know, can play the small forward shooting guard position and get 4 assists per game and hit threes and get steals and do some athletic stuff. And that's great for fantasy. That's really interesting. And then he just completely shit the bed. I never foresaw for a second that he was going to become a power forward, and this is probably the best game of his career. This is 2 decent-ish games from Hezonja with Gordon out. you're not adding him in 12 team leagues. I don't like the fact that the Magic declined the rookie option. I think that's always a there's just no benefit in that. Sure, you save, you know, 6,000 shit. You save $6 million, $7 million next season on his fourth year rookie contract, but it doesn't give you any options. You can't trade him you can trade him, but his value is lessened, as I talked about with Jahlil Okafor last week. You know, what do you do with Hezonja? I just didn't really understand it. This was a fantastic performance from him, and it is something to definitely monitor. But this, again, we must remember that John Isaac was out and Az Gordon was out, so Hezonja could very easily just go back and not play at all. Wesa Wundu also started, 33 minutes for Wundu, the second round pick, 6-3-2. This is with Aaron Aflalo out. He's been very much bad this year. Really reduced rebound rate, assist rate, shooting percentages from his numbers in college. And he does have a little bit of potential, but he's not realizing it at the moment. While John Simmons, I talked about how his usage was going to take a hit joining the starting lineup, but then Gordon went down, then Fournier went down. So his usage is through the roof. 20 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists. The efficiency is what's been keeping his numbers up, and it wasn't there. If you can try and trade Simmons if someone in your league is not as aware of the total situation in Orlando, and you can get some good value back, I would. And don't discount people's ability to get frustrated with certain situations or to overrate things. Someone told me today that they were able to get Nikola Jokic back today in a trade for, and I wish I could tell you who the players were, but they were, from memory, it was Jahlil Okafor and Alfred Payton, because he was sick of Jokic's injury. Now, this is obviously a different situation, but people will look at it and go, man, 26-8, let's go, John Simmons. And you might be able to get a top 50 player back. Because when Fournier comes back, when Gordon comes back, his usage will come down, and then he doesn't normally handle the ball and get 8 assists. His efficiency's been well up. That could drop. So there's a sell high moment here for John Simmons, I believe. Let's go on to the next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Indiana Pacers. I don't want to talk about revenge games too much, but just again, Paul George, 2 games against Indiana, shitful. Simple as that, shitful. And this is always my point about this. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. There is no observable trend, so it means absolutely jack shit in DFS, in fantasy. It means nothing. If it's not an observable trend, it means nothing. The Thunder got the victory, though, and Steve Adams was a beast. 23-13 in 35 minutes with a block. His field goal percentage is through the roof this year. His efficiency is well up. His usage is actually up a touch as well, despite George and Mallow joining this team. He has been fantastic. And the other guy who I was pretty interested in the preseason before the Carmelo Anthony trade, and even I think before the Paul George trade, Alex Abrines, started for Andre Robertson, 32 minutes for Abrines, 14-4 with 4 triples. It helps that he's hitting his shots, because he wasn't doing that to begin the season. For now, he's just a 3-point streaming option. Pat Patterson, he hit 2 threes, but he doesn't do much else. While Mallow and Russ, their efficiency was horrendous. Westbrook had a triple-double, but he wasn't good. 10, 17, and 12 with 2 steals, while Mallow had 12 and 5 and 2 blocks. I'm not thinking that Mallow or Russ are droppable guys. Oh, shit, of course Russ isn't. I don't think Mallow's a droppable guy at this point, but they are struggling. And Russ, after a perfect 9 from 9 from the free throw line in his last game, he went 3 from 7. And this is one of the largest weird things that does happen in the NBA. Just Russell's inability to hit free throws. It's confusing and it's weird. And I don't know, man. If I owned Russell Westbrook in a dynasty or keeper league, I'd be pretty worried, to be honest, about the complete drop-off in his play and the fact that his game is not going to age well. I'd be concerned. On to the Pacers. Vic Oladipo, he struggled also in his revenge game. 19-5-6, but on 26 shots, that's 34.5% from the field. Still some okay numbers from Vic, so it wasn't a disaster. Well, Thaddeus Young, got to give him credit here. 11-10, but it's the 10 combined steals and blocks. 7 steals, 3 blocks. That is an absolute monster from Thad. His minutes have been rising lately because Domantas Sabonis playing next to Miles Turner, it's not something that really worked out. Remember when people were getting really, really turgid about it? Oh, Domantas, man, he's going to play 28-9. He's going to play next to Turner the whole time. No. We're seeing his minutes go down, and I like Sabonis. I think he's solid, but he just isn't able to get these 25, 26 minutes a night that a lot of people were pontificating about. And Nate McMillan's quotes of, oh, we're going to play them together as much as possible. Turns out as much as possible is not very much. And I said, while I do like Sabonis, if you're owning him in a 12-team league, you can get rid of him. He's owned in 63% of leagues, which is just amazingly too high. As for Turner, he wasn't awesome here. 9-4, but he continues to just block shots like they're going out of fashion. Another 3 blocks. So even on the nights when he has shitful shooting performances, he still adds, you know, 3 blocks and 2 triples. Daz Collison and Corey Joseph were both back, 14-3-3 for Dazza, while Joseph did his usual nothingness, 7 points in 19 minutes, while Lance Stevenson, 9-8 in 22 minutes, loves a highlight play, loves a stupid play, loves a poor decision, loves being right at the top of the shit bloke rankings, but I find it hard to get entertained by him just because he is such a shit bloke, but he does do some weird and wonderful and really, really bad things on the court as well. It's the whole Lance Stevenson package. Let's move on to the next game. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Washington Wizards. What's going on with Andy Harrison here? 30 minutes for Andy, 20 points, 7 assists, big numbers. I think until Mike Conley comes back, he is going to remain the starter. Will he be A, this efficient and have this much in terms of ball handling responsibilities? Probably not. But if you're in a 16-team league, he's worth a look. In a 14-team league, shit, I'd be okay to consider him in that streaming spot. Now, of course, in this game, there was no Tyreke Evans, who sat out with a hip injury, and that afforded Harrison a little bit more. So he's not, by any stretch, a must-own or even a standard league guy. Jermichael Green also had a big one, 15-15 with 3 triples. I rate him very, very lowly in terms of his standard league value, so I wouldn't be jumping on that, while Gasol had 15-10. With Tyreke out, they didn't start Mario Chalmers, as many people pontificated. It was Chandler Parsons who moved in. Dylan Brooks slid down to the 2, and Andy Harrison moved across to the 1, and Chandler played 27 minutes. 12-5, 2 threes and 2 assists. He is going to be a standard league player. I am telling you, I am not guaranteeing it, but he is going to be a standard league player. Yesterday, I made an adjustment on Parsons on Basketball Monster for the rest of season projections. I said, oh, he'd probably play 27 minutes a game from here on out. And someone said, oh, are you expecting him to play 35 minutes a game, you know, at the end of the season to make up for it? And I said, no, I don't think he's ever going to get to 35 minutes a game. I think that, you know, 27 is a reasonable estimation of him playing at 24 for a few bit more than moving up to 27, 28. Next game, he's at 27 minutes. I might have to bump that further, because if he's playing 27 minutes now, if there are no setbacks, he's playing 30 minutes in February. He's probably playing 30 minutes in January. So he is someone to watch. And if you're sitting strong in a 14-team league, I would add him. If you're sitting, well, not even if I'm sitting strong, if I'm mid-pack, I think he's got 14-team league value now. If I'm in a 12-team league and I'm first or second, I'd consider adding Chandler Parsons. Not many blokes on the waiver wire with a clear ascendancy towards larger minutes have top 50 value. He's, well, not value, upside. Probably won't get to top 50, but top 100, it's a possibility. Ben McLemore continues to be shit, and Dylan Brooks is doing nothing. On to the Wizards. John Wall returned, had a little bit of a minutes limit, 13 points with 4 assists. But the most important thing here is Tomas Satoransky was his backup, as he should have been. 3-2-2 for Tomas in 15 minutes. They still snuck Timmy Frazier in there for 5 minutes. Not sure why. That gives Satoransky some of that deeper league value. There was no Markieff Morris. There was no Yan Mahinmi. So Marcin Gortat saw extra minutes, 12-8 in his 29 minutes with 2 blocks. When Morris and Mahinmi returned, though, forget it. You know, Gortat's going to go back to 24 minutes. Jason Smith also filled in the void there. Otto Porter enjoyed having Johnny Wall back. The efficiency was back. He was 14-9 on 50% shooting, while Brad Beal had 18-4-7 in his 39 minutes. Mike Scott made the start for Markieff. By the way, Markieff Morris, 12-team leagues, get rid of him. I don't think there's any point in him. Mike Scott, 10-5 with 2 threes, really, at best, a streaming option. The Portland Trailblazers and the Miami Heat. CJ McCollum, I did talk about this yesterday. He was due for a game, due for a big game, because he had been struggling. Here it was, 28-3-3 with 2 steals. While Al-Farouq Aminu, what is going on with this guy? He's always been a really good rebounder. 37 minutes here, 15 points and 13 rebounds, but 5 triples. And that is the third game in his last 4 games where he has hit exactly 5 threes. The other game in that group, he hit 0 threes. But the fact that he is hitting threes at such an elevated rate, it feels so anomalous. He averaged 1.1 threes per game last year. He's at 2.2 already this year. And as I said, 15 threes across his last 4 games. You have to own him with that sort of production, but I just feel there's no way he's going to maintain, 45% shooting from 3, which is what he's currently doing. After two games in the wilderness, Shabazz Napier returned, 23 minutes. The Blazers had lost quite a few in a row, so they did make some changes. 9 points with three steals for him. Mo Harkless's shitful season continued. 9 minutes for him off the bench returning from injury, while Evan Turner played 23. We saw Jake Layman and Pat Connaughton's minutes reduced in order to get Napier back into the rotation. Zachy Collins played 21 minutes in a start, with Yusuf Nurkic and Myers Leonard both out. Collins had 9 and 3 with a block. I really do like him long term. I've said this plenty of times. I like him way more than Caleb Swanigan. And I do think that he can, in a 28 minute a night role, be a top 100 type of player in the next 4 years. But when it's not happening this year. Dame Lillard had 18, 3, and 6 in 37 minutes. I wouldn't recommend adding Collins in any redraft leagues, because with Leonard going to be back in the next game, and then Nurkic probably not too far away, he's just likely going to go back to DNPs. On to the Miami Heat. Joshy Richardson had 11 points, 2 rebounds, 2 steals, 3 triples in the first quarter, and then he put up nothing, like literally nothing else after that first quarter. Still, it's a pretty good line, but man, it could have been so much better. While Bam Adebayo played 30 minutes, 12 and 7 on 100% shooting. Now, he got extra minutes because Kelly Olynyk was pushed across to the power forward position because Justice Winslow suffered a knee sprain. Now, Winslow's injury is not considered serious, but it's really going to put the clamps on the Heat rotation. It's going to give all their other guys some extra playing time, including this bloke. Yes, Jim Johnson just narrowly missed the Raymond Felton triple-double. 37 minutes for Jim, 10 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists. If Winslow has to remain out and Whiteside, I think Whiteside might be out for another couple of weeks, if I'm being honest. Jim's going to have a significant role. I talked about him the other day. He needs to be owned everywhere. People are complaining about his performance. He's basically the same guy he was last year, to be honest. Olynyk had 10 and 6 in 28 minutes. I think he's still a 12-team league guy, while Deion Waiters played 38 minutes, so the elbow mustn't have been too bad, but he had 17 points on just 18 shots, bricked his free throws, wasn't a good game. He's not a good player. Simple as that. On to the Denver Nuggets. Nikola Jokic was available to play. He was back, but Dr. Michael Malone decided, as you evidenced, as you heard that quote at the start of the program, the good doctor decided that despite the medical people telling him he was fine to play, Malone looked into his eyes and went, "You know what, mate? You're not ready. I can see it. You're not ready. It's in your head. You're not ready." You'd hope there'd be some level of communication between the coaching staff, the medical staff, and yeah, you feel that the medical staff might be able to do their jobs. Who do you trust? Doctors, trainers, or some numbnuts that's a basketball coach? Now, in terms of drawing up plays, I'll side with Malone. In terms of telling me about the health of a guy's foot, probably go with the guys with the degrees. That's just me. I'll happily defer to players in that. And Malone doesn't really have a history of common sense decisions a lot of the time. One thing we know that he lacks is logic. That's something that's been quite apparent. Ken Faried was named as a starter. Then he was demoted back to the bench and Trey Lyles started. And then Faried went from DMP CD in the last game to playing 16 minutes and had 1 point and 10 rebounds. Trying to figure out what's going to go on with Faried is a tough one. I don't think he's very good. You're well aware of that. But I do think that when Jokic, when Dr. Malone decides that when he looks into the eyes of Nikola and gives him his blessing and says, "You're ready," when he's ready, when the doc gives him the tick off, when Jokic is back starting, I think Faried starts next to him. Now, I think Faried starts next to him and plays 18 minutes and Lyles plays more. But I think Faried starts next to him. And I'll tell you why. Because Faried is really shithouse when he's not playing next to Jokic. Him and Plumlee, dreadful combination. So I think that Ken Faried will start and then Lyles will end up getting more minutes. But trying to match Jokic and Faried together is the best way to do it. And that's one thing I actually do agree with Dr. Mike on, is that if you're going to play Faried, you play him with Jokic as many minutes as possible. Old baby neck Wilson Chandler, 14, 5, and 2 in 37 minutes, getting the extra run because Farton Will Barton was out of this one. I don't think he's a strong must-own. You can own him in 12s. I don't think he's a must-own guy in 12-team leagues. Talked about the blue arrow already. I've got to drop this one, though. Nice, Gary! saw people taking the over-under on how many times I was gonna play this one.
Nice, Gary!
We'll leave it there. 36 points for Gaz Harris. 3 triples, 3 rebounds, 6 assists and 2 steals on 64% shooting. One of the things that incensed me in the off-season, and maybe I'll get incensed at things a little bit too much, especially on Twitter.com, is when Adrian Wojnarowski posted that Gaz Harris had signed the extension, and every numbnuts in the world, who? NBA players, man, get paid too much. This is ridiculous. Gary Harris is nobody. He's not an all-star. He's good. Simple as that, he's good. He's a young, good shooting guard who is good. Well, he's good. That's as simple as it is, and he's been better this year, really taking his game up a few notches. Now, when Jokic returns, his usage will likely drop down, but he is as efficient as they come, and the increased playmaking has been an interesting part of Gaz's game this year. As for Trey Lyles, he played 33 minutes, wasn't quite as successful as the previous two, 9-6, and even if he does start getting 26 a night, I don't think he's a 12-team league must-own player. Onto the Celtics, Al Horford was resting, so we had a starting lineup that included Aaron Baines, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Kyrie Irving, a small starting lineup. Baines, he had 17-6 in 28 minutes. He just does what he does. When he gets these minutes, the numbers come. It's like clockwork. I thought Vanilla Tice would do a little bit more. He did battle some foul trouble, 8-3 in 18 minutes for him, while Terry Rozier, I know people do like adding him in 12-team leagues whenever anyone goes down on the Celtics. It's not as simple as that. He played 20 minutes here, 7-2-5, not 12-team valuable. Jason Tatum, he hit his only three, so there you go. 15-4 in 28 minutes, while Jaylen had a really good game, 26-5, 2 steals and a block. He's one of these guys who is significantly overvalued based on what he actually has produced so far in his career. So if someone wants to send you a top 60 player for him, I'm all for it. He is clearly a must-own guy, though. Kyrie had 33 with 7 assists. Let's look at Marcus Smart here. Had 4 points, but 9 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. If you drafted him, it should have been in a specific type of build, and you'd be pretty happy with his production. If you didn't draft him in that sort of build, then you wouldn't be happy, but that's why you draft guys with specific purposes, or for specific purposes. The Utah Jazz and the Chicago Bulls. Rocket Rodney Hood returned. There was some confusion earlier in the day about what injury he actually had. He said he had an Achilles problem. It wasn't an Achilles problem. It was a different tendon in his ankle. So Rocket sent a few scares through people, but he was back. He played 25 minutes and had 15-2-4. If he's on your waiver wire, add him, please. With him back, I think Alec Burks is going to suffer. Now, Burks, he still played 25 minutes. He had 13-7. If you do own Alec Burks in a 12-team league, I would be considering him extremely expendable. And Rick Rubio played 27 and had 14-6-4, actually one of his better games. But I think that Rubio is going to be stuck in this mid-20s zone. We saw Thabo Sefolosha drop down to 16 minutes, and that's something I've been talking about quite a bit with Thabo, is when all these guys come back, he is going to suffer a lot. Some people didn't really agree with that, but this is what I did envisage happening with Sefolosha. Jingle and Joe's not losing playing time. He had 6, 8, and 5. And Don Mitchell also isn't. 37 minutes for him, 32 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and a block. And the efficiency just keeps getting better. 58% from the field, despite just going 1 of 7 from 3. He has been fantastic. Rocket should be owned. Burks is a droppable player now, I believe. Rudy Gobert, 6-11 with 5 blocks. He hasn't been blowing people away, so you might be able to throw a buy low offer at his owner just because the minutes are down. Maybe people are a little bit concerned. The 5 blocks are awesome, but I'd be throwing buy lows at his owner. On to the Chicago Bulls, Nikola Mirotic. Hey, maybe he's good. Who knew? 35 minutes for Mirotic, 29-9, 3 triples and 2 steals in 61%. Now, this was a weird one because Lauri Markkanen was announced as the starter, and then the back flared up and Mirotic was a late inclusion into the starting lineup, and he was a monster. If you want to add him in 12-team leagues, go right ahead. One thing I wouldn't tell you for sure is he won't continue to shoot at 61%. I think he's good. He's not that good. And he won't play 35 minutes a night. But there is a realistic expectation or a realistic scenario where if him and Markkanen can play together, then he could play 26 minutes a night and then he could be a top 100 player. Now, I'm not sure how that's going to go long-term. It would mean eliminating Punch Bob Shiploke out of the rotation. I'm all for that. And you're running Lopez, Markkanen, and Mirotic with, you know, maybe 10 minutes of Portis. It would require that to happen. So if you're a big Portis fan, you might not see that happening. But that's a possibility. That's a path to minutes for Mirotic. But otherwise, if Markkanen's playing 30, if Lopez is playing 30, That's 60 minutes. That gives you 36 minutes between Mirotić and Portis to distribute. Your 18 each is an even split. Do you go 22 to Mirotić or 14 to Portis? That's where the concern comes in. Now, if you think that Markkanen's going to come in and play 24 minutes a night, I don't think that's a realistic possibility. But the option here is to limit Portis and to play Markkanen and Mirotić together more. And that could open up some value. So if you want to go and look, this is the perfect time. Just add him and just see what happens. You can do that. Chrissy Dunn, 13, 7 and 8 with 4 steals. Efficiency was bad, but he looks a different player compared to what we saw last year in Minnesota. Maybe the stagnant, non-existent, inefficient offense that Tom Thibodeau is running has had an impact on Chrissy Dunn. I was never massively high on him. You're well aware of that, but I am happy to be proven wrong because he is playing really well at the moment. Justin Holliday, the last two games, under 25 minutes, 12 and 4 with 2 steals. And with Mirotić back, they don't need Holliday going out there and just jacking as many shots as possible because he's actually like a good player now who can go and do that. So I'd be absolutely considering Holliday a droppable player in 10-team leagues and probably 12-team leagues. The Hammer Denzel Valentine played 36 and he had 13, 3 and 2, while David Nwaba played 28 minutes and had 3 and 8. These are the games where... This is what, when I say I don't think Nwaba is a must-own or even a high priority add in 12-team leagues, because, yeah, look, he's fine, but he's probably not going to be a 65% shooter. And he had 3 points here. Love what he can do on the court, really tenacious at it, but he's not this awesome fantasy option. And this is sort of an illustration of why I believe that. Let's go on to the next game, the Milwaukee Bucks and the New Orleans Pelicans. Probably don't give enough shit to Jason Kidd. Some might say that I give too much, but he's playing Giannis Antetokounmpo just way too many minutes. 42 minutes for Yanni here, 32-9, 4 assists, 5 steals, a block, and a 3. That is a monster line. But the minutes are a concern, especially for a bloke who had to miss international play with knee soreness. Wink. But then, he's missed a game this season with knee soreness. Now, I know that there is no Jabari Parker around, but you know what you can do? You could play maybe the rookie of the year over 30 minutes a night. Doesn't replace Yanni, I know that. You could maybe play your first round pick a minute. DJ Wilson maybe could see the court. Maybe. It's a worry. The Muppet, John Henson, 14 and 6 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. He's owned in way too few leagues. He needs to be owned. Well, Eric Bledsoe, 14, 3 and 5 with 4 steals. As for Brogo, no Dellavedova, no Snell. Played 28 minutes and had 11, 3 and 2. That's okay as a back-end 12-team league guy, but... I think if there's someone else out there, I'd be more than happy to drop Brogdon and grab Mirotić to see what happens. I'd be all over. Yeah, I'd be happy to drop Brogdon to grab Etuan Moore and see what happens there. It's annoying, but it's just the reality of how things are. Because whenever you've got the opportunity to find 17 minutes for Gary Payton II, the Mitten, you have to do it. It's simple. You can't keep good players off the court. So 17 minutes there for Payton, 18 minutes for DeAndre Liggins, and 17 minutes for Rashard Vaughn. Yeah, that's 52 minutes of shitfulness that's there when Brogdon could be playing 35 a night. But nah, got to get those minutes into Rashard, to Liggins, and to the Mitten, who did, predictably, nothing. On to the Pelicans. Tone Davis was back, didn't miss a beat. 25 and 10, 4 blocks for Tone. Boog had 26, 13 and 7. He was awesome. Etuan Moore. Jason Tatum has passed the baton on as the greatest shooter in NBA history. It is now Etuan Moore's. 21, 5, and 4 with 4 triples on 6 attempts. This guy is out of control. The minutes are through the roof. They're not going to change. I think he's a guy for 12-team leagues. I think you got to add him. Drew had 16, 4, and 8 as well. Another strong performance. But Rajon Rondo, just when I started to say, you know what, Rondo's playing well, he plays 18 minutes and has 5, 3, and 3. Now, in due credit to Rondo, Rondo has been a prickly character in the past. But I think with a lot of his teammates, he does have team first a lot of the time. A lot of the time he does. And it seemed like that was the case here because he was ready to check back in. He said, you know what, Jameer Nelson's playing well. Just keep Jameer out there. And that's admirable from Rondo. It's not great for us in fantasy, but it is admirable from him. Jameer played 30 minutes and had 5 points with 7 assists and 2 steals. So we're not rushing to grab Jameer. We're not rushing to drop Rondo based on this one game either. But it was an interesting thing to see after this, a string of good games that he, and I started to praise him, that he came out and shit the bed. The Toronto Raptors and the Phoenix Suns. Serge Ibaka is killing it at the moment. I thought he was done earlier in the season. 21 and 13 with 3 threes and a block. Awesome stuff from him. 34 minutes. But how's my boy Jonas Valanciunas? Is Dwayne Casey woken up? 30 minutes for Jonas, 20 and 11. If he's available, add him. Now, when he was playing 19 minutes a night and it just appeared like he was never going to get playing time, you got to make those decisions to move on. I would have dropped him had I owned him anywhere. But now, I'd be pouncing because that's two big games in a row. And if Casey has realized, shit, maybe we should play our good players the minutes they actually deserve, and he's deserved 30 minutes a night for the last two or three seasons, that maybe good stuff can happen. We will see how long it lasts, but it's worth looking at. DeRozan had 37, 7, and 4, and Lowry in a bit of a slump as well at the moment, 12, 2, and 7. Pascal Siakam's minutes have plummeted. Jakob Poeltl's minutes have plummeted, and that's enabling Serge and Jonas to put up bigger performances. Norm Powell, that's not happening, unfortunately. For the Phoenix Suns, it was Tyson Chandler's turn to sit out, so he was ruled out with personal issues. Now, I don't want to make too much fun in case something actually has happened with Tyson, but he has missed a lot of games due to personal reasons, and they have almost invariably coincided with his day in the center rotation. I'm not saying that it's fishy, but I'm just saying that's what's happened. This was Chandler's scheduled day out, and that means that Alex Len will be scheduled to sit out the next game. Like clockwork, Greg Monroe started. He had 17 and 11 with two blocks. He'll go to a bench role in the next game behind Chandler, and then he will sit out the game after that. So these guys playing 67% of the games, it's really tough to own them. You know, your priority is Monroe, and then Len, then Chandler. But if you know when to play them, which we sort of do, they can be useful. But in a league with, you know, no games limits or anything like that, it is tough. Because one out of every three games, they're not playing. Troy Daniels, 32 and 3 with 7 triples and a block. He is a guy that is going to shoot. We know that. And while Devin Booker's out, he's going to have the opportunity. So he can provide some short-term Duke Ellington-like value. Josh Jackson and Marquese Chris were the two worst players in the entire NBA in terms of fantasy on Wednesday. That's not good when they're both top 8 picks from the last two seasons and on the same team. Marquese Chris had 18 minutes, 2 points, and 3 rebounds. Missed all 3 of his shots. I'm going to call it now. He's never going to be good. I of course, I could be wrong on this, but I know he's young. But he just seems like he is a real shit bloke. And it's not looking promising. I think Josh Jackson has got significant potential to go that way as well. 22 minutes, 2 points, 1 rebound. He just doesn't look the part at this point at all. And he's still young. There's still a long way to go. I wasn't overly impressed by him in Summer League. I wasn't overly impressed by his statistical translations. I wasn't overly impressed by his shiplokeness. Because he's a shiploke. He is a shiploke. It's a worry. It's a definite worry as a Suns fan. Now, some of it can be blamed organizationally. And some of it can be blamed on the players, but you could also put the blame on the organization for drafting guys who were known to have these character-based issues. So that's interesting. TJ Warren, 17 and 3 in 25 minutes, while Tyler Ulis played 29 and had 16, 5 and 8. We're probably due for another 30-minute Mike James game coming up, but that's not as predictable as what happens with the centers, unfortunately. Also, good game from Alex Len, 9 and 6 with 5 blocks for him. The last game of the night was the Charlotte Hornets and the Houston Rockets. Kid Gilchrist, a big, big night. 18 and 11 on 67% shooting. Only 26 minutes for Mick. The rebounding had been way down this season, playing alongside Dwight Howard. So this is a little bit of an anomaly, as well as the high field goal percentage. He's okay for 12-10 leagues, but far from a must-own. While Dwight had 26 and 18 with 3 blocks and actually hit 73% of his free throws. But still, a significant negative in that category because he took 11 of them. Nick Batum went from doubtful to probable to starting. 32 minutes, 9 and 9 with 3 assists. Didn't look all that comfortable. But the fact that he played and played 32 minutes should give you some level of confidence in him moving forward. Not too much, but a level. Marvin Williams, 27 minutes, terrible. Frank Kaminsky, 8 points in 15 minutes, terrible. Jez Lamb, 21 minutes, 9 points. I think if you get two more starts in a row out of Batum without any sort of lowered minutes or injury concern, if Batum is playing 30-plus minutes, you can't own Lamb. He's not going to have 12-10 league value. But it's just that nagging elbow that is the concern, I guess, with Batum and then Lamb's value. On to the Rockets, Jim Harden, 21, 4 and 8. Yep, he's good. Clint Capella, 9 and 11, 4 blocks, also good. Luke Marmute suffered a weird shoulder injury, went up for a dunk, tried to grab onto the rim, and his hands slipped and then put his shoulder down to brace, and it sort of banged his shoulder out. Looks like he's going to be out for a period of time. We'll know more after the MRI. tomorrow, but I expect a week or so. That's going to boost Ryan Anderson's minutes. It's going to boost PJ Tucker and Nene. They're the three guys who are going to benefit. So therefore, not going to have much impact in 12-team leagues or even really 14-team leagues. Ariza had 13 and 6 and Eric Gordon had 17 and 4 and somehow did not get a single rebound or a single assist. That's the Ryan Anderson special right there from Eric Gordon. All right, that is all the action from Wednesday. Then I'm going to come back and I'm going to talk DFS for Thursday when we've got five games on. Let's go to a song by Semeron, and the song is going to be called Cherry Blossoms. And then we'll be back to talk some DFS. Let's have a look at the perfect DFS lineups for Wednesday. Over on FanDuel, the Blue Arrow had 50, Chris Paul had 58.9, Gaz Harris had 52.6, and Troy Daniels had 38.6. Mario Hezonja, 42.8. Someone just tweeted me saying, oh, why didn't you talk about Hezonja in the DFS portion of yesterday's show? Well, the reason is if Aaron Gordon and Aaron Aflalo both played, then Hezonja may not have even been in the rotation at all. He was very dependent on Gordon specifically being out, enabling him to get those minutes. Yeah, look, I probably should have mentioned, if Gordon's out, Hezonja might be worth a look. No one in their right bloody mind would have any clue that he was going to put those numbers up. He was a great flyer for GPPs, but he had no real cash reliability, and it was dependent on Gordo being out. Yanni had 64.8, Thaddeus Young 53.5, Mirotic 43.8, and DeAndre Jordan 55.5 for a total of 460.5, and that cost $58,500. On DraftKings, Chrissy Paul 62.75, Gaz Harris 53.25, Hezonja 41.75, and Mirotic 44.75. DeAndre Jordan had 54.5, the Blue Arrow 53.5, Thaddeus had 46, and Dwight Howard 55.5. That's a total of 412. And that cost $49,700. Dollary-dos. Let's talk about Thursday's action. There are five games across the NBA. Let's look at the first one. It is the Detroit Pistons. They are taking on the Atlanta Hawks. The Pistons are favored by 3.5, and the total is 207. The Baptist John Collins has been upgraded to probable, while Luki Babbitt is also probable. We know that Mike Muscala is still out with his ongoing ankle problem. For the Pistons, I would imagine that Stan Johnson won't automatically vault back into the starting lineup. It's not like he really lit things up in his bench role in the last game, so we might get some more Reggie Bullock there, or maybe we get some Luke Kennard. At point guard, Schroeder is at 7,700. Has been a little bit underwhelming lately, but I do think that this is a decent price and a decent opportunity for him to bounce back and at least get 32 or 33 points with 40-point upside, maybe even 50-point upside. So I think he's a decent guy to have a look at. As for Reggie Jackson, he comes in $2,000 cheaper than what Schroeder does. And you know, I think he's a strong option for cash as well. At 5,700. Yeah, look, his numbers recently haven't been fantastic, but he still has a 23-point average over his last five, and that's not a bad area to go. We've seen the Hawks give up some pretty decent numbers to point guards, and I think Jackson's in a spot where he can capitalize on that. At shooting guard, Avery Bradley's at 5,100. He has been just really, really poor. If you're going to use him, it can only really be tournaments. Marco Bellinelli not really happening at the moment with the emergence of DeAndre Bembry. Kent Bazemore has been crushing it, especially with that game against Cleveland. He's at 5,900. I feel pretty good about Kent getting to 30 points, so I think that he is an okay look at lock, well, not lock guy, but an okay guy for cash. Luke Kennard probably wouldn't be interested there. At small forward, Bembry's at 4,100. He had 21 points in 22 minutes in the last game. At 4,100, I'm probably not all that interested in Bembry, but he's a name to pay attention to. While the artist, formerly known as Torian Prince, at 6,000, I really like that that floor there for cash. He's playing really, really well at the moment. I think that's a solid, solid option. Reggie Bullock could start for Stan Johnson, but I wouldn't use either of those guys. Depending on which way Van Gundy goes, it doesn't really change my opinion. At power forward, Toby Harris is at 6,700. His numbers have plummeted recently, as has his salary. He's averaging just 25 over the last five. It is an opportunity for him here, so I wouldn't hesitate in putting him into a player pool, but I wouldn't consider him a lock guy. While the Baptist love John Collins, love the opportunity here, but 5,900 in the first game back when minutes could be a concern. There's Tyler Cavanagh, there's Ersan Ilyasova, there's Babbitt. Like, how is he going to work Collins back in his first game? That would lead me to somewhat fade him. At centre, you've got Miles Plumlee. No, Andre Drummond, 9,400. A real opportunity to smash here against the Hawks. You know, with almost, I'd say, a 40-point minimum we're looking at for Drummond. So I do like him. Probably wouldn't be locking him in cash, but I do love the 55-point upside that he does have on this abbreviated slate. The other guy you could have a look at is Boban, who's at 3,600. He put up 23 points in only 13 minutes in the last game. It's just going to be about him getting onto the court against Kavanagh or against Ilyasova. That could be a real issue for Boban defensively, but it also could be an issue for Atlanta defensively. So there is, you know, two ways to sort of view that. Boban is clearly just going to be a GPP sort of player, not really a cash guy at all. On DraftKings, a similar sort of scenario. Kent Bazemore's at 5,700. I quite like him. And Torian Prince as well at 5,700. Both of those guys I feel pretty good about for cash options. And I really do like Andre Drummond as a cash play too. 9,300. He's got an average against the Hawks the last three times at 44 points. He's been playing much better than that this season. The last couple of games is an exception. Well, Dennis Schroeder is at 7,200. I think he's a strong option too. You can take the punt on Harris, on Avery Bradley, on the Baptist at 5,500, but none of them really stand out as awesome options to me at this point. Let's go on to this next game. It is the New York Knicks. They are taking on the Brooklyn Nets. We are in Brooklyn, and the Nets are favored by 1.5 points. The total is 212.5 points here. We're probably going to see the debut of Jahlil Okafor in this game. At point guard, Frankie Ntilikina is at 4,300. This dude's been putting up some good numbers with some decent minutes lately, so he is someone to look at. We've seen point guards against the Nets go off pretty regularly. I think that at 4,300, you should feel a level of confidence in Frank at least reaching that 20-21 point mark with 30 to 35 point upside, which makes him an interesting option to me. Spencer Dinwiddie is probably a little bit too expensive on FanDuel at 7,700. That's a big bump to his salary. He's been playing, you know, consistently well, but I think that price is probably just a little bit too high. But I do really like the matchup for Spencer. Then you've got Jarrett Jack at 4,900. I'd much rather take Frank, save the $600, and look for that upside. Love Caris LeVert, 6,100 for him. I think that 30 points is a realistic expectation, so I think that he is a strong play in cash. And then there's no other shooting guards at all even listed on this slate. At small forward, the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, 4,700. Always just a tournament guy to me. Have no interest in him for cash. Well, Damari Carroll at 6,000. I think it's a risky one with the unknown, I guess, with Okafor, how that affects Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and whether it pushes guys down positions. Courtney Lee's at 5,300. His shot has been off recently. I think that he's still a fairly strong cash option. While you got Jumpin' Joe Harris, Doug McDirt, Lance Thomas as other small forwards, and I have zero interest in any of them. At power forward, Hollis Jefferson's at 7,200, has been playing well with a 33-point average over his last three. Just it's a level of unknown. The defense against Porzingis might be a problem for him. That might limit what he can do at times. Maybe some foul trouble for Rondé. That could also be a concern. I don't think this is a great spot for him. Whereas Kristaps at 10,200, I think he's a pretty good cash option with, you know, clear 70-point upside. 45-point floor, probably, and that's pretty good at that 10,200 price point. At center, Enes Kanter, 6,700. He's going to have a real opportunity to beast against some of these guys. I think that he is almost a 30-point lock here, at least. So I like him. And then you've got Jared Allen, who they might have to put in to try and combat Porzingis just with his length. I think he's a worthy GPP option, just someone to take a flyer on. Maybe he comes out with three blocks and has a sneaky 10-10 double-double. He could be someone to pay attention to. I'm not interested in Kylo Quinn, Tyler Zeller, and Jahlil Okafor's at 5,200. Didn't play at all in the last game. I'm not expecting big things out of him. You might be, but he's not someone that I'm really all that keen on investing a huge amount of time or money into. On DraftKings, it's a similar story. Frank Ntilikina at 3,800 is a very, very strong play. He's averaging 21 over the last five on DraftKings at 3,800. He's on the way up. Really like that in a really good matchup. Spencer Dinwiddie, I also like as a cash play, 6,700. And Caris LeVert, the same, 5,400. Now, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is much, much cheaper on DraftKings. So even though there is the potential of Okafor coming in and mucking things up, at 6,100, I find it hard not to consider Hollis-Jefferson a cash option. It's a big difference between him on DraftKings versus FanDuel. Porzingis at 9,600 is also a guy that I would smash in as my high-priced guy. But that's not the way I like to build lineups either. I don't look at who's the high-priced guy, lock him in and build around it. I want to see where the value is and then try and fit other guys in. It's never as simple as, he's my one guy that has to play, and let's fit other guys around them. And I don't think the Porzingis is that, but he'd be a guy I'd be looking at pretty aggressively to try and work out lineups with him in it as much as possible. Okafor's at 4,000 on DraftKings, so I feel much happier about using him on DraftKings than I would over on FanDuel. The next game, the Sacramento Kings and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Wolves are favored by 9.5. That's also, coincidentally, the average amount of minutes that the bench is going to play in this game. 203 is the total. We don't know the status of Nemanja Bjelica, which is basically every... There's been so many of these guys who are just day-to-day for weeks. Rocket Rodney Hood. Bjelica is another one. John Isaac. They're just day-to-day every single game, and it's pissing me off. So at this point, expect Bjelica to be out, and that bumps Townsend's minutes, it bumps Jeng's minutes usually, and it bumps Taj Gibson's playing time. So pay attention to that. With Sacramento, who bloody knows what's going to go on with those guys in terms of rotational minutes, especially in the backcourt. Frank Mason's at 4,200, and while he'll probably play more than De'Aaron Fox and maybe more than George Hill, I don't think he's this awesome fantasy option, so there's nothing much for me to love there. Well, Jeff Teague,
my name is Jeff.
He has got a pretty nice matchup here for himself. He's done well against Sacramento in the past. I'm not huge on Teague all the time, but I think this is a good GPP opportunity to use him. De'Aaron Fox, I'm not interested in. Well, Georgie Hill, he is a tournament flyer, had 37 in 28 minutes in the last game, and at 4,400, that's insane value. But the game before that, he played 18 minutes. So which George Hill do you get? Nobody really knows. At shooting guard, Bogdan Bogdanovic, 30 minutes in each of the last two games, 4,300 for Bogdan. He is a 30-35-point upside type of play, so that makes him a GPP option, while Budrick Hield at 54. I thought he was coming on, and then he's sort of regressed a little bit. So when I can spend 1,100 less on Bogdan and feel more confident that Bogdan's going to play more minutes, that would be the direction that I would throw that money. Andrew Wiggins, 6,500. Actually, he had 39 points in that game against Philadelphia, but his consistency is horrendous. His production's not really up to scratch. I'm not really feeling too much there. Garrett Temple, Jamal Crawford, no. At small forward, Jim Butler, 9,500. He is averaging over 40 minutes per game in his last six contests. He's averaging 48 points in his last five. I think he's a fairly strong play against the Sacramento Kings. I think he's a good cash play, but he's an awesome tournament play as well. At power forward, we have got Taj Gibson, 5,800. I'm banging that in cash. Really like that, especially with Bjelica unlikely to play. And then Gorgui Dieng at 3,700. He's maybe a tournament guy, but weirdly in the last game played just 18 minutes despite it being an overtime contest and Bjelica being out. Zach Randolph's at 7,500. He saw his minutes come down with Cauley Steinbach, played 28 in the last one, still put up 35 points, but I think 7,500 is probably just a little bit too high. At center, Cauley Stein's at 6,000. We've seen Karl Anthony Towns have not so good games at times defensively. So Cauley Stein at 6,000 is interesting, but it's still more of a tournament guy given the ridiculous rotations that Jaeger runs. While Karl Anthony Towns at 10-1, well, you know he's going to play minutes. And we've seen centers go off against Sacramento. So Towns, he's got that 60-point upside here. So I do really like him and Butler as pretty big options. But there will be some frustration associated with Towns and the lack of shot attempts, which does always piss us off. On DraftKings tournaments, Teague and Bogdanovic, again, two upside type of plays I'd look at, especially Bogdan at 3,900. Jeff is at 6,400. Then for cash, I really like Zebo on DraftKings, 6,800. Despite the minutes limit or reduced minutes with Cauley Stein back, I think at 6,800, he can return that value. Love Jim Butler at 87 and smash Karl Towns at 9-1. I think that Karl Towns, not a lock for 50, but he's pretty close, but at 9-1, that is a great, great price. I also think that Willie Cauley-Stein goes from a tournament option on FanDuel to a cash guy on DraftKings because of that price at 5,100 and the ability for him to come out and potentially have a 35-point game. That's not a crazy expectation for Will. I think that's a great, great price to consider using him here. The point guards for Sacramento is still really a fade-type situation, although if you're going to throw one of them into a tournament, that one should be George Hill. He's at 4,200. Let's go on to the next one. We're looking at the Los Angeles Lakers and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are favored by 10, and the total is 219 points. Dwayne Wade missed the last game with left knee soreness, so we'll check on his status. If he is out, LeBron gets a boost. We're going to see Jose Calderon get a boost. Jeff Green, Kyle Korver, all those guys get an increase in their playing time. At point guard, Lonzo Ball's at 7,500. This guy's averaging 41 FanDuel points over the last three games. He's had a 53-pointer in his last five, but he's a little bit too fluctuable in terms of his production for me to really rely upon him in cash. As for Calderon at 3,800, if Wado's out, I don't hate using him. And maybe you get 20 points out of him, and that enables you to put some of the higher price guys like Durant or like LeBron into your lineups. At shooting guard, Jordy Clarkson's at 53. I think that's a fairly decent cash option here. We've seen backcourt guys go off against the Cavs often, while Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's at 5,900. Always, it's going to be hard for me to go away from him being a cash or being a tournament only sort of a player. The plumber, J.R. Smith, 4,300. I'm not interested. While Kyle Korver at 37, always got that upside to go out there and hit a few threes and get you maybe 21, 22 points, which could be useful. At small forward, Brandon Ingram at 6,900. Probably a little bit too expensive for Ingram, to be honest. So I think he's a fade in this situation. While LeBron James. He's at 12,600. If you can find the cheap guys to put around him, sure, you're going to get 55, almost 60 out of LeBron guaranteed, but it might be a challenge to fit him in into a cash lineup just given how much that price is. At power forward, I really like Julius Randle here at 5,300, especially for cash. I think that he has got a relatively cemented role. Now, it could be 24 minutes, could be 26, but I don't think it's going down to 18 or 17 like we saw beforehand. Larry Nance at 5,000, not really feeling too much from there. Jeff Green, Jay Crowder, Kyle Kuzma. Kuzma's the only one of those guys I'd really look at, but at 5,700, I don't feel confident for him in cash, but I think there is some tournament upside there for Kyle. At center, Kevin Love is down to 7,900. This is an opportunity for him to drop a 45 burger. So I really, really like Kevin Love here for cash and especially for tournaments. He's got tremendous upside. Brook Lopez, whatever the opposite of tremendous upside is. While Tristan Thompson's returning, he put up 0 points in his return. He'll be in limited minutes and he's not a good fantasy player anyway. So nothing for us to get overly excited about with old Tristan. On to DraftKings. LeBron's at 11.9. That's a great cash play. Kevin Love at 79 is a cash option, as is Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson at 5,000. Also, 5,100 for Randle and 5,000 for Clarkson. Like all of those guys, a very similar sort of distribution to the way it looks on FanDuel. While Lonzo at 7,000, I might sneak him into cash, but in the end, that's probably still more of a GPP 50-point upside type of a guy with a fairly significant downside. And if LeBron, you get the feeling that LeBron might be, have a little bit of extra attention for Lonzo in this one. Just a gut feeling that LeBron may do a little bit of something here against Lonzo, which might make it a little bit hard for him to do what he needs to do. And that's why I'd only be looking at him as a tournament player. The Dallas Mavericks and the Golden State Warriors is the last game. The Warriors are favored by 12 and the total is 211.5. But interestingly, we have got Draymond Green as doubtful, Zaza Pachulia as doubtful, and Uncle P Nick Young as doubtful. Now, the Warriors have been cavalier with their designations of players all season. Guys go from probable to out, doubtful to in. It's all over the place. But at this point, given the definition of doubtful, which means 25% chance of playing, Draymond's out, Zaza's out, and Nick Young is out. So that means we could get that starting front court of Jordy Bell and Omri Caspi again, and that's going to provide some real value for us. So that is something that we need to pay attention to. at point guard. Will it be Sean Livingston that starts? Will it be Pat McCaw? Will it be Quinn Cook? I really don't give a shit who it is. None of those guys, given the way that Kerr is running those minutes, is going to have much value in terms of DFS. But on the other side, Dennis Smith's out, so JJ Brayer at 5,500, he's been putting up good numbers, and I think he is a worthy cash guy to have a look at. He also does okay against the Warriors also, and then you've got Yogi Ferrell at 47, who had a really strong game in the last one. Also, I think not a bad cash cheap point guard. At shooting guard, Klay Thompson's at 7,600. I think he's a fine guy to lock in at that price. Maybe not too much tournament upside, but a decent cash play. Well, McCaw, you can throw into a tournament maybe. Well, and Wesley Matthews at 51. He's been really good lately, Wes. I don't think there's much tournament upside, but you could consider him a cash guy. I probably wouldn't. At small forward, Caspi's at 4,100. He had 26 in the last game in 25 minutes. Really like using him. Iguodala at 4,700. I don't think there's much upside in Iggy, but I do think that for cash, that's a fairly strong play as well. Well, Durant at 11.9, I love, and the pencil at 66, quite like as well. In fact, I think there's a ton of DFS options in this entire game. At power forward, Jordy Bell, 4,300. He had 25 in 26 minutes in the last game, much like Caspi. I think that is fine. Now, putting both Bell and Caspi into a cash lineup might be a struggle. They both put up good numbers in the last game, but putting them both in might be tough, but I still do like both of them. And Dave West at 4,500, this guy is putting up numbers at a ridiculous level. Over his last five, he is going at 50 points per 36 minutes. I think that that is fine for cash for Dave West, given the absences of Zaza and Draymond Green. Dirk at 4,500, don't really see too much there to love with Dirk, while Maxi Kleber at 4,300 has had the occasional big game, but I don't think it's something you can really rely on. The one I'd want to take a flyer on is Dwighty Powell. 3,900 for Powley. I think he's got 25 to 26 point upside here, which is not a bad play at that sort of cash. And at center, yeah, nah. Salah Mejri, nope. JaVale McGee, absolutely not. All right, let's take a look at what happens over on Yahoo for tournaments. Kevin Love, Torian Prince, Avery Bradley, Iguodala, Alan Crabb, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Jarrett Jack, Dwighty Powell. And for cash, it's Yogi Ferrell, it's Frank Ntilikina, Dave West, Julius Randle, Omri Caspi, Corley Stein, LeVert, Bell, Hollis Jefferson, Dinwiddie, Thompson, Towns, and Porzingis. For Moneyball and tournaments, Lonzo Ball, Enes Kanter, Jeff Teague, Iguodala, Crabb, Bogdanovic. And for cash, we go Ntilikina, Clarkson, Bazemore, Gibson, Dave West, Julius Randle, Caspi, Corley Stein, LeVert, Wiggins, Bell, Thompson, Butler, Towns, Porzingis, and Durant. And wrapping it up with draft stars for tournaments, Townsie, Porzingis, Drummond, Teague, Harris, Tobias, that is, Avery Bradley, Andre Iguodala, DeAndre Bembry, Pat McCaw. And for cash, we've got Ntilikina, Dave West, Budrick Hield, Reggie Jackson, Corley Stein, Caspi, Randle, LeVert, The Pencil, Jordy Bell, Hollis Jefferson, Enes Kanter, Dinwiddie, Schroeder, Love, Clay, Jim Butler, and Kevin Durant. That wraps it up for today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, which is brought to you by mybookie.ag. Go and check them out and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a match deposit bonus of 50% bonus on that as well. Don't forget, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, leave a 5-star review. You can also find us on Google Play, on Spotify, on TuneIn, and on Stitcher, and on YouTube, where you can subscribe and give us a thumbs up over there as well. Find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. My name is Josh Lloyd. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Dr. Michael Malone.